You're listening to CodeCast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. We are growing the community of developers across Zambia, one line of code at a time.
Hey guys, welcome to the fifth episode of CodeCast. I'm your host Mukuma, and we have a lot in store for you on this episode. Today's topic is called building communities, and we're talking about everything related to developer communities, what's happening around the world, what's happening in Zambia, and what we can do to make our communities thrive. I have a special guest, pretty excited about it, and I'll allow him to introduce himself.
All right, my name is Daniel Piri. I'm a student in India, Paro University. I'm a developer advocate at Hasura, hackathon director, community lead at Unified, which I think is most important for today's discussion.
That's pretty cool. As you've noticed, it's just the two of us today, Wezi, Elias, and Cynthia send their apologies. They'll be back on the next episode. And it's actually sad to say this is our last episode of the year, 2018. We resume in January. We kind of have to take a break, guys. It's been a long year.
A worthy guest for the last episode.
definitely. And as per custom, we're going to kick it off with some news. And first off the bat, this past week, Instagram notified some users that their passwords had been exposed due to a security bug. So if you didn't know, GDPR came into place in April this year, right?
It was April.
And if you don't know what GDPR is, it's basically a general data protection regulation that the EU has put in place to kind of protect its users from the many troubles of the internet. And some of these things include the right for your information to be deleted completely if
that actually happens.
If you so wish. I mean, that's a debate for another day.
Yeah.
But I must put it out there. I feel like my data is forever on the internet. I press delete or not, it's still there, somewhere on the server.
If not on their servers, on someone else's servers, but it's still there. I think so.
You think so, right? So basically, those security feature rolled out in April, and for some strange reason, some users were able to have their passwords included in a URL in their browser that was stored on Facebook servers. And these passwords apparently were in plain text. There's a lot of there's no clear indication of how these passwords were actually stored. Instagram maintains that they hash their passwords, so there's no way it could have been in plain text. So I guess we have to go with what they say.
Well, I mean, clearly they're lying, though. If people had their, passwords shown in their browser in plain text, then clearly they don't hash their passwords. Anyway, evil cop.
And, this is more drama on Facebook because I think just this week there were more issues. Russia and how Cheryl neglected to tell us that Russia was involved in 2016 elections. It's crazy, like people are calling for senior officials to be fired and stuff like that.
Well, it's official now, like Facebook said, like, okay, yeah, we did that.
Well, don't quote me, but it's in the media, and they feel like Facebook should own up. There's speculation that Mark wasn't even in the discussions around actually releasing official statements around Russia's involvement in
the
election and stuff like that. It's crazy.
I don't know, it goes back to, what these companies have and the policies and the leadership, really, and what they're doing to, back to GDPR again.
Yeah, I guess so. So if you don't know what GDPR is, especially if you're a developer, please look it up. You might develop a website and you'll find out that people in the EU aren't able to see your information.
Yeah.
So please look it up and make sure you comply. It's actually not so hard.
Yeah, especially if you want to reach towards that, European demographic, you have to be GDPR compliant.
Yeah, definitely. Your end?
Okay, so something really interesting that I saw on Twitter actually is that Uber, although it's in Kenya already, they want to take advantage of the buses, the minibuses. We call them minibuses here. I think they call them matatas there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not very sure. Sorry, Kenya, if I said that wrong. So it's really interesting because, like, some time back, there was a solution here being crafted for mm-hmm. minibuses, but it came to a stall because of, let me just say, politics. And you see, an outside company is coming into Africa and creating a solution based on a problem they saw that we could have solved.
Yeah.
If we didn't have all these issues surround, like, you know, all these issues that, you know, politics brought up. And, you know, like, it's because usually when you look at a minibus and these, you know, public transport, yeah, public service vehicles, rather,
mm-hmm.
they're practically empty sometimes. And Uber has seen that, like, there's money to be taken from those empty seats. And that's profit for them. And that's a loss for us. So it's really interesting.
So wait, just to kind of dwell on this a little more, who do we blame, really? Like, we can blame the government and all these politics, but isn't there something we can do that... Isn't there a lot more we can do beyond all these regulation challenges and whatnot?
Yeah, okay. Honestly, I feel like at the end of the day, the government shouldn't control what we do. We should, like, you know, we shouldn't be reliant on the government, and we should, you know, give our own solutions for our own problems and just, you know, forge ahead, regardless of whether the policies are for us or against us. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the power of technology, right?
Definitely. Definitely. And this kind of reminds me of one aspect of the news I want to talk about, which is, drumroll, the developer conference, first ever in our very sweet nation.
Yeah, history was made at UNSA. Yeah, so when was that? 17th of November?
17th November. And it was really fun. And the reason I point to this is one of the speakers mentioned there used to be Millennium Development Goals?
SDGs.
Now they're SDGs, right?
Yeah, we changed it.
I forget what the S is.
Sustainable.
Sustainable, yeah. Sustainable Development Goals.
Yeah.
And we have about 15 of them, right?
19, I think.
19. Okay.
They're a lot.
And each one of them represents a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And if each of us take one problem and try to solve it using technology, we're basically killing a lot of birds with, like, one stone.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what, like, I think that was the keynote, right?
Yeah.
And that's what he highlighted, you know, like, just look at an SDG, look at your skills, and then try and use your skills and just focus on solving one particular goal. And if each person just focuses on one SDG,
yeah,
in 10, even 5 years, this place could be much better than it is today.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And it was a very good experience for me, and I enjoyed a lot of the keynotes, a lot of presentations, really. One particular one that struck me was, to be honest, a lot of them really struck me, but geomatics and land surveying with Medim, that was really cool. A different perspective on how to look at life as a developer.
Mm-hmm.
We always talk about being a generalist and being a specialist as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that shouldn't stop us. If you're going to be a specialist, it doesn't mean you only know one language or
exactly.
You only know one thing. You should really endeavor to learn a lot more outside your preferred box, per se.
Yeah, I was privileged actually to talk to the CTO of Medim, and he's a civil engineer.
Yeah.
That hit me, you know, and I'm like, okay, That's the beauty of tech, you know. People in different fields are leveraging the power of tech and using it and creating solutions for themselves, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of reaching out and finding different problems that we have all over the world, you know. And he's, you know, I chatted with him for like 10 minutes, and he's a really cool guy. We talked about using GIS and different softwares.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked some projects. I don't think I can talk about them now. Maybe I can, like, mention the natural disasters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, predicting natural disasters with, like, mapping software and GIS. That was something I was really excited about talking to him about. And that stuff they're already doing. And he talked about how they work with, like, the Ministry of Lands and Supply. It's Lands and Supply, right?
I think it's just Lands. Then.
That's
Works
and
Supply.
Okay,
yeah,
my bad. The Ministry of Lands, and no need to manually go out and survey. They just have this software that does it all for them. So no need for, like, cartographers and map makers. And it's really important for a country like Zambia, because we really don't know how much we have in terms of land.
Yeah.
And if we're going to, like, use all that, you know, all those resources we have, we have to know where they are.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And it kind of circles back to Uber going to Kenya and the Matatas.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's all these things. You identify a need. How much are we doing as individuals? Like, it was basically a challenge. Like, look within yourself, see how much more you can give, and just step out and try. Don't be afraid to try. It felt like all the presentations were kind of interlinked in a lot of ways. We had presentations on microservices, on DevOps. We had ethics as well. Basically trying to encourage people to learn the stuff we usually ignore as developers, especially if you're a developer trying to release a product onto the market.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of ethics and boundaries we often overstep, and it's important that we are reminded what we need to do to protect ourselves and to protect by far the client, who's very important.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting. I really enjoyed it, and I hope next year's will be absolutely amazing.
Next year's will definitely be much, much better, especially with all the you know, all the talks people had on building like communities and just getting more people to join like the ecosystem, the tech ecosystem in Zambia, and building that, which like reminds me, I'm sorry, I know we're supposed to talk about this, but like, I'll bring it early. So like the Inspirethon we had, right?
Yeah.
So like just all these events, like encouraging people to start coding and taking up tech related endeavors in high school or as early as possible, even in primary school. And I think now you can talk about that.
So Inspirethon was basically an initiative that we had on the 10th of November. So this was basically to encourage more high school students to take up an interest in, to be honest, not only programming, but anything tech-related. Anything that allows them to be a little more creative around solving problems, even in their schools. And we got to sit down with these guys and find out what their challenges are within school, how they feel about their curriculum and what they feel like is lacking. And we got a good sense of what we could do to actually help them out as well. We have a lot of events in the tech space that we host at specific venues, mostly defined. We never really step out of those venues and follow these guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's one avenue which we feel like could be a really good platform for them to be encouraged to kind of step into this realm, I guess.
Yeah. You know, as a community builder, what I loved about the Inspirethon was the fact that we reached out to these people, and I think like based off the people I talked to, we had a really good like demographic, and you know, we had people from everywhere, all walks of life. And this past week, a lot of people I've been talking to have told me, and we've just, you know, discussed how people craft solutions that they dream of instead of crafting solutions that will actually make an impact on people.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we reached out to these people, these students, we asked them exactly how, you know, how we can help. We ask them exactly what problems they face. And like now we have like a proper image of the way forward in terms of what we can do to actually like grow the ecosystem. I think that's the thing I love most about the Inspirethon.
Yeah.
And going forward, I'm really excited about like the impact we can have. The stuff we're working on.
You know, it's interesting, huh? I guess we could get into it now. Our discussion today, like, we're having a conversation. You know, guys, it's unscripted. We don't script this stuff. We just have conversations.
Yeah.
We're talking about communities, right?
Yeah.
Building communities. There's a lot of misconceptions around it. I think some people think it's easy. Others not so much. But we're here to, like, shed more light on it, I guess.
Yeah.
So we could actually start with Inspirethon. Let's kind of double back.
Yeah.
Like, in your community, right? In your environment, do you have any communities like on campus that actually help people like get into the space or encourage them to leverage on their skills and stuff?
Okay. Let me just like give a brief summary or introduction of what my community does. So I'm a college student, and I'll be very frank about this. It's my very honest opinion that college sucks, really. And if you really want to like do anything in the programming or tech space, and really you have to branch off of like college and like the stuff they teach you, in my specific case. And really it's the case for everyone in my field and in my college doing the same thing, that you see what people are doing out there, and you see what you're doing, you feel like there's this huge gap, and what our aim is really is to bridge that gap and give students an opportunity to learn, interact, and be on par, you know, with like the world. So that's what we're doing. So like that was the goal of our community. So what we have is like workshop sessions, hackathons, on like a 2-week basis. That's the plan, but like implementation is much harder with things like exams and, you know,
yeah,
and people's interest comes comes into play. And then it goes back to what you were saying. People think building communities is easy. So you have hardships and you have an event. Like, you have an event and like 150 people come. And you're like, okay, cool, we're doing really well. Then, you know, you're like, okay, you're going on. You try and go on with that momentum. The next event, only like 50 people come. And you're like, what happened? And then it goes back also just getting feedback and asking people and creating solutions that people, you know, will actually use, and asking them, like, what's wrong? What can we do to make things better for you?
Mm-hmm.
What's the best solution you think would help in this case?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So when we talk about, I like what you just said about having really sort of like an up-down graph on attendance.
Because it's a sine wave.
Yeah, right? Like, it's never consistent. And I guess this is kind of preempting the discussion, but you have situations where people register for an event, but they don't show up. For example, you could have 100 registrations and only like 20 people, 30 people, you know, show up. And sometimes you find this is a limited event, like you have specific spaces available.
Mm-hmm.
So people are RSVP but still don't show up. And sometimes you could have 100 people come the one month. Next month, you could have 100 people, but different from like the previous 100 people
came.
Like, the consistency sometimes is really an issue. Would you say that you've had that kind of challenge as well?
Yeah, so I've had that challenge. So something we have is, for us, it's not a really big challenge because it's mostly school events. So like we're actually working on like branching out from just our school and like helping out the other schools in our locality. So what we had is we would have people come, and I think like 50% would be new faces. And then we're like, okay, what happened to the other people? And then, you know, it goes back to feedback. And then maybe people just didn't vibe with our, you know, with the stuff we're giving them, or they just weren't interested anymore. It goes back to priorities again, like we were talking about the other day. But the important thing is that you have to like have at least 30% of people coming back and having, you know, those regular people, regular attendees rather. And like you talked about, like 100 people registering and then only like 20 show up. So that happens a lot. And there's like many ways to combat that. And one thing people do is they make their events paid. But being a student community, that's something we can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So really, we've just been trying to emphasize on how specific events will affect or have a positive effect on their careers.
Yeah.
And I think that had a really good turnout because it's some feedback I got from someone actually. Like, feedback is really, really important. Always get feedback. Don't be afraid of feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had a chat with someone. We just sit in the corridor, right? And he was like, okay, so I heard about this event you're having, but what good would it have on my career, right? Like, I don't think you're telling that to people.
Yeah.
And I thought about that because previously what we'll do when we have an event, we'll just roll it out on like the WhatsApp groups, and maybe like 2 days before we'd go into like classes and like
mm-hmm.
tell people about what's going on. And we changed that way. We still go into classes, but like we explain more. We spend like 5 minutes telling people the workshop or the session will cover, how it will benefit them, what skills they will earn, or and like, you know,
mm-hmm.
how it can help them improve themselves and really just make them seem or make them feel like they're more employable, they have more value added to themselves. So it's important to do that, and I think that's a solution we've had to the low turnout but high registration.
Okay, so Daniel, tell me a little bit more about the actual communities you're involved in. Like, I know we've been saying student communities and
mm-hmm.
so on and so forth. Do we have, is this one whole community throughout the whole entire campus?
Yeah, I would call it that. And it's really branching out. I think I mentioned we're like expanding towards like other campuses and trying to, you know, do the same thing and just finding out if they have the same problem. And then if they do, we integrate our solution there also. So I'm a part of a few other communities. So there's the Google developer groups in Baroda.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a part of that also. I think that's really what got me into community. And that's offline communities. Online communities, I think we're part of so many communities, we don't even realize it. I mean, like, your class WhatsApp group is a community. So, like, yeah.
Sadly, I left that group long time ago. I might have left that community.
Yeah. Which, like, your high school or, like, your college?
All of them.
Your high school and everyone leaves now. So, yeah, like, I feel like offline community is really, like, because of the person-to-person interaction, usually they have, like, the more visible out, like, effect on you.
Okay.
And, like, I don't know if we have time to talk about this, but, like, the Google Developer Group personally is, like, what, it gave me, like, the whole concept of community, and we, like, I just started going to meetups, and I don't think anyone else was, like, really doing this. It's just 30 people, no, less than that. Yeah, somewhere there. It started, like, 2 years ago, it started out as 30 people in a small room, just talking about tech, talking about,
probably,
you know,
Google I/O.
Yeah, so we have stuff like that.
And stuff like that.
The Chrome event, the Chrome Dev Summit, the TensorFlow Summit. And it started out as that, just meeting up. And then you start to see how many opportunities come up when you're part of such community. So that's really how I got into, like, public speaking and speaking in tech. And my first thing was at, I think, a TensorFlow extended event. I talked about Twitter sentiment analysis. And then from then on, you enjoy it. So you start looking out for more opportunities.
More opportunities, yeah.
And I was really, you know, I was really honored to, like, speak at the DevFest in front of, I think, about 350 people.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't remember, but it was a lot of people. And it's, as a student, it's something I can say, like, the people I was talking to are, like, professionals. And it's, you just have that feeling, like, okay, wow, I did this. And it's a goal I had because, like I mentioned, it was 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So I attended my first DevFest in 2017. I was just amazed, really, at, you know, so many people, like, same vibe, same goals, same stuff they want to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they love the same stuff. They want to do the same things. And you just, you know, you feel comfortable around those people. And that's really the essence of community. So, like, going towards that, like, I saw those people giving amazing sessions. I was like, wow, how are these people doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and then I had, you know, I couldn't speak in public. I was, like, this shy, timid person. And, you know, I'd never stand in front of a group of people.
The struggle of a developer.
Yeah. But then I just said to myself, next year, that has to be me. I have to be, like, you know, I have to be up there saying something and talking to people and sharing what I love. So the next year, I was a speaker. I was talking about jumping onto the JavaScript Express. JavaScript being a language I only started to learn 6 months before. So it was an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I'm really a part of so many other communities. I mean, GitHub is a community also. I'm a part of that. I mean, probably everyone who is on GitHub is part of that community. So that, yeah, online communities are really huge.
Yeah.
And that's what I was talking about yesterday
at
DevCon ZM. So yeah, leveraging developer communities and advancing your career.
And it's interesting, you know, you listed a lot of communities. Yeah, I feel like I know all those platforms.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a part of maybe five or six of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm most active on Twitter. it can get really toxic sometimes. So
although Instagram,
like,
is winning, I'm doing a lot of Instagram.
No,
by the way,
you can't keep hyping your Instagram account. Like, but I do agree that it's actually happening, and I'm thinking about reopening mine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I closed down mine, and I don't know, I just feel like there's too many platforms.
Yeah, okay.
To keep track of.
It's true, you can have, like, too many platforms. So, like, you know what I do is, I think I mentioned already that, like, I'm a dev advocate, and really, like, you have to build that online profile, right? And you have to look at new ways of reaching out to new people.
New people. And
especially
stuff.
When you talk about, like, our goal of, you know, getting more people into this tech ecosystem in Zambia and in Africa as a whole. So, like, on Instagram, really, that's where you'd say, quote, people waste their time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you look at how you can add value to people. So, like, on my Instagram, I do stuff like tutorials, and I, like, live stream some coding and just give advice. I like people ask me questions, like, how to get started in this, how to take up programming. And just, like, if you check out, like, my post, it's not just, like, posting, just, like, read the captions, and you're just looking at how you can add value to people's lives. And that's the point of these platforms, you know. You just have to really look at how best you can reach out to the people who are on that platform.
On that platform, yeah.
So yeah, I did mention a lot of platforms, but I feel like that's one that as developers we should really be looking at.
I remember we had a conversation a few months ago, and I was telling you about my decision to kind of step away from, to kind of get into more advocacy work.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever told you what the motivation was. It was because I joined a particular Slack group called Software Engineering Daily. I don't know if you've heard of it.
What is it?
Software Engineering Daily.
Yeah, the podcast.
Well, they have a podcast,
yeah,
but they have a Slack group as well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'll see if I can show you. So, like, you're pretty much in a group full of other developers from different spheres, like even engineers from Google across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had the privilege of talking to a couple of guys. I talked to a guy from Nigeria and a guy from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
This was when I was preparing for... one of the four loop talks I was giving on the advantages and career opportunities in developer evangelism and how people should actually think about sharing more of their work, telling stories,
mm-hmm.
and just pretty much talking about how they started. I feel like sometimes we neglect our own stories, and we realize that if we told our own story, it would inspire someone, maybe even more than one person. I have a favorite saying, and I think it's by Miro Rukeyser.
Mm-hmm. Don't pretend I know who that is.
Please pretend away. So, like, this saying, basically, and I'm not going to quote it word for word, but it basically talks about how the world is made up of atoms, right?
Mm-hmm.
But think of these atoms as tiny stories.
Okay.
So if each atom is a story, it means the world is pretty much built around stories.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of yourself as an atom or as an individual that's part of this world, you have your own story.
Exactly.
And you have an influence with your story. So it's very important for you to be very vocal about what your story is, and you learn from yourself and other people as well.
You know, I love that you touched on stories. So like, I was having a chat with a really good friend of mine in a cafe back in India, and we're just talking about. I was asking him, like, okay, so he's like, I'd call him Instagram popular. So yeah, we're just chatting about, you know, I was like, okay, so why do you do Instagram? Why do you do all that? And really, he says, you know, whenever you do anything, you have to look at why you're doing it, right? And like my. Social media activity, really, Instagram especially, is like you said, it's really telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I've had like the privilege of talking to so many people around the world and interacting with different people and being part of so many communities, and it's really an issue that we don't face when we're in like home. When you're home, you don't really face being an outsider or being a minority, really.
Mm-hmm.
And being an international student in a foreign country, you are a minority.
Yeah, definitely.
And with minorities, people start to feel... I mean, the word minority makes you feel inferior already.
Yeah, definitely.
So people need to get past that, and people need to know that there's more to, you know, to what you can do. And it's something that I was just chatting with someone, and I was telling him to do something, and I was like, no, I can't do this, because, like, I'm in Zambia. And I was like, no, you need to look past that, you know? You don't let where you are or your geographic location limit what you can do, and or like your skin color, really, you shouldn't let all that like limit your dreams and what you can go for. And that's really like what I do with my Instagram, because not many people do that. Not many people know that I'll put it bluntly, there's this black guy who does this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's something that reached out to me. It really touched me, because there's been a few times where like people in my situation have reached out to me, and they've been like, Daniel, I'm really grateful for what you're doing, because you're showing people that there's more to us than what they think is there, right?
Yeah.
And you're really just giving us something to look up to, and, you know, someone, something to, you know, a goal or a vision to, you know, and say that, okay, we can do this also because he's done it also.
Yeah,
and I feel like that's a really big problem that we have in Zambia specifically. We don't have people to look up to for the youth, and that's why we have all these problems that they have, you know, all these problems people talk about. So that's, yeah, it's just tell your story and like be someone. People are afraid of being someone people look up to. And you have to get past that, really.
Because people are afraid of making mistakes.
But that's the thing. We were humans. And when you realize that that people, everyone is human. And that's something like I've discovered with developers especially. See, you see many tweets like, oh, I have been coding for 15 years and I still Google how to do this in this language, right?
Yeah, and the most common one is how to put your HTML structure.
even for something like people think Git is really hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you see people Googling Git commands and they've been like in the ecosystem for like 20 years.
That's why I love the cheat sheet, man. Like, and I'm referring to it daily. Oh, which reminds me, I actually have a lot of cheat sheets still available, like a whole pack.
Yeah, you should do a giveaway or something.
Yeah, I'll do an online giveaway for cheat sheets and stickers and stuff.
Yeah, talk to him. He'll give you some cheat sheets. They're really cool and really helpful. But yeah, going back to that, really, it's more about letting people know, like how things actually are. Because a lot of things, when you're watching from the distance, they seem like they aren't the way they seem they are. Like Cynthia was talking about imposter syndrome when she was in the room with Jeff Dean. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
Jeff Dean probably goes through the same thing before he gives a talk.
Yeah.
And he has, you know, like, you know, oh my gosh, so many people. And really, if someone like, you know, Cynthia, the way so many people look up to her, has this problem, and she tells people that, okay, I have this problem, and it's something, it's normal, you just need to get past it. It breaks down a lot of barriers that people think tech have. Like, people go about saying stuff like, tech is hard, how do you manage to do this? It's not easy. There's problems, but there's solutions also, and people should make people aware of these solutions. And that's the importance, really, of telling stories and telling honest stories.
Yeah, definitely. And on that inspirational note, take a break. Here's some ads.
Sure.
See you guys on the other side.
You're listening to CodeCast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. We are growing the community of developers across Zambia, one line of code at a time. Visit agoracode.community for more information, or like us on Facebook @CodeAgora. We're on Twitter too @CodeAgora.
I'm Daniel Piri, community lead and developer advocate, and you're listening to CodeCast Zambia.
So welcome back. I'm with Daniel today, and we're talking about developer communities really across the world. We haven't really zeroed in on any communities just yet, and I guess we could get into that now. I put out a tweet a few months ago because I recently started following a lot of Nigerian developers,
mm-hmm.
and I was very interested in the ecosystem. I wanted to find out why Nigeria is growing so fast and the rest of Africa is kind of like chasing Nigeria. And I came up with two theories. One is they have a lot of people. They're like 70 million
of
people.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, that kind of helps you. In Zambia, we have like, what, 17 million now?
Yeah, 17,
and there's largely no access to, like, proper access to, let me not say access. There's a pricing issue with internet access.
Mm.
It's actually present in a lot of areas in the country, but
yeah.
then access is the issue. Price, I know our data bundles went down like by 75% recently,
mm.
is it 70%? And it kind of boils down to, again, priorities and so on and so forth. So I came across a few developers and I put out tweets about it. I'm really fascinated by how countries like Kenya, Rwanda are making so many strides in the tech industry. And I realized, okay, communities are growing fast.
Mm-hmm.
And because communities are growing fast, it means there's a lot of ideas. And when a lot of ideas come out into the open, it means they're tested. And when they're tested, it means we kind of find...
You get validation for
validation
all,
for
your
all
plan,
the ideas.
You look at whether you can implement them and yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So like it got me thinking, like growing tech communities across Africa will basically push us, push the continent like... into a digital revolution, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It will change mindsets, it will change how we do business, it will change how we perceive certain things. Like, I remember making a comment yesterday about how when you get into programming and how it teaches you this logical thinking, like, you always find yourself breaking down problems into,
yeah.
like, depending on what kind of programmer you are, like,
mm-hmm.
you have a particular way to address problems now, and so on and so forth. So this is like, the kind of ripple effect that comes from growing more communities, right?
Yeah.
And when I looked at it, I found not only do they have a lot of people, but they also have a lot of other things in their favor.
Yeah.
Like, I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, like policy, like government and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of policy change has kind of
helped
growth,
yeah.
the growth. I mean, they still grow without the policy, but the policy kind of gave it a lot more push, and so on and so forth. And it kind of got me thinking about what we're doing here, what drives policy change. When they see the need for it, like to really see the need, they will definitely make the change. And it comes from what we talked about. We don't rely on them.
Exactly, yeah. I think it's important just to get started and then get going and just start seeing even just that small bit of change, right? And then they'll look at it and they'll be like, okay, I think this could be far, far much better, you know, if we chipped in and, you know, changed a few things. It's interesting because I was talking to Regina at the conference the other day, and she was saying, yeah, definitely, if something, I was telling about the thing for the high school students that we're planning, not planning, that we will do. I'll be very optimistic about that.
Yeah,
so like, I was telling about that, and she's like, okay, if this is to work, we need a lot of stuff to change, you know, with like the curriculum and the way we teach students and the way we tell, and just what we tell them is possible, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really important that we get something like that going, and it's a mindset change. I've forgotten who we're with. That's another person. I don't think you're there. So yeah, he was telling me about some stuff I was sharing, and he said if stuff like this is going to work out, it really goes down to like changing the mindset, you know, of everyone, and just even just the lowest denominator, and showing them like there's so much more possible, and you shouldn't limit yourself.
Yeah, you know, I just looked up something and I just realized Nigeria has 182 million people. And half the country are under 30. So you've got, 91 million people under 30.
Can you imagine?
I mean, that's like 3 or 5, 6 times what our population is as a whole.
Yeah.
And you find that it's the same ratio here. I mean, we have 17 million people, but we have about the same ratio in terms of how many young people we actually have. And it kind of leads us into the different communities that we have here. Like, maybe we could get into that as well. Just kind of, you spent some time here, obviously. You've grown up here. You just went to school in India.
Mm-hmm.
Like, from the time you left and now, what would you say is like the biggest difference in terms of community and growth?
I think it's hard to say that because, like, before I left,
no idea.
I had no idea what was going on. Yeah, but I was in India, but I was watching like from afar and seeing like all these communities come up. So I've seen Agora come up. I've seen a few GDG events, although it's gone quite quiet. And I've seen stuff like developer circles, Facebook developer circles, and there's a Hackers Guild also. I think I'm forgetting one. Sikana Network also, really. I love what they're doing. And Forloop has just come also.
Yeah.
And I feel like all these communities really are pushing for something. But like you said, if you look at our population, we've got like 17 million people, and more than half of that are youth. And just Africa as a whole, in general, has like the highest youth population in the world. And like by 2030, I think, I don't remember the exact figure, but okay, it's a really big number, but we have a lot of youth, you know, in like 10, 15 years. And it's important that we use those youth to do like the right stuff and propel ourselves to where we need to be as a continent and as a country. And these communities really need to focus on the beginning, like, you know, where things start. I mean, despite, you can't focus on everyone, first of all. So they have their professionals or like stuff like Forloop. They do meetups for professionals, people who are already in tech and people who are already, you know, programming.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. That's why I mentioned the Sikana Network and Hackers Guild, because I love that they're reaching to children and they're telling them and they're teaching them how to do certain things. Because at the end of the day, those are the people who, you know, continue and run the ecosystem. Because if you're talking about ecosystem change, it's not something that happens in 5 years.
It takes time.
It takes quite a long time. And you need to reach out to those first.
Yeah, and I remember my motivation for getting into this or getting into the whole community thing as a whole was because for a long time I tried to work in isolation, but it never really helped me.
Yeah.
I started stuff but never actually finished because I couldn't find the right information. You know, the internet sometimes can be a really big place.
It is a big place.
Especially if you have no idea how to, you can't find resources that you actually need to help push whatever it is that you're getting into. And I had that challenge a lot. And I know we tell this story all the time when we get called to like meetups or whatever, talk about how we started. When we started, we weren't even thinking about a community.
Mm.
We were thinking more of a marketplace.
Yeah.
Like, we were thinking e-commerce and all that stuff.
Sure.
But then, because of the challenges we had, it kind of drove us to thinking about the community aspect. Like, look, we're trying to build a business, for example.
Yeah.
But then, what good is a tech company if you find it difficult to get good help, for example? It kind of factors into the outsourcing issue as well.
Yeah, like
we don't want to outsource, we want to get from within.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do to help ourselves? And that's where it all started. It was like, what can we do to help? Okay, so we can start like a feeder. You know, we thought about the football club system. You have a feeder club that gives you players.
Exactly.
So, like,
so you start like from high school and then like feed the programmers and then
maybe
start up like internships in like local startups, local companies. Then like they graduate and then they become like full-time developers.
Exactly.
And it's like it's local.
It's one whole thing is it's starting with the people around you and getting them to appreciate what good work is, and then letting them find opportunities. Like I said, it started with us looking for people that could work for us.
Sure.
But then ended up realizing, oh, well, we'll train all these people, but in truth, not all of them can work for us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So how do we get them to find their kind of footing in the world, basically? So when I think about that and I think about now, like, we have a startup space that's growing really, really fast.
Yeah.
We have
amazing.
So many people going through Bong Hai startup program now. And
Discover, I went through that also.
You
amazing.
Went through that as well, right?
Yeah.
And there's actually a lot of other organizations doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And you know, you're looking at all these people and you're like, okay, you guys are tech-centered, but who are you hiring as your developers, really?
Yeah, and they outsource mostly because I understand there's like a problem with getting...
quality, first of all.
Yeah, quality and... they're not really reliable, I would say. And I think that's the important thing we need to, like, you know, target and build and encourage that culture of reliability and accountability for all the work. And ethics also. I love that during the conference, people touched on ethics also. And really, when you take that tag off the Zambian developers, you see, like, everything, the ecosystem, you know. You talked about synergy.
Mm-hmm.
And how everything works out. So you have these communities making and, you know, what I would say, building developers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have these startups hiring them and keeping them engaged. And then it all, you know, it creates a market for them and it's like an incentive for these communities to keep doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I understand most of them are non-profit.
Yeah, it actually reminds me of... it reminds me of a lot of things that I think... this is why I feel like the conference was so important, and this is why I'd like to encourage everybody to get involved in online communities, in local communities, because, you know, you learn so much. You learn things that you wouldn't have figured out if you were on your own. Like, there's so much perspective that comes from being in a space with other people that kind of enjoy similar things that you do, like minds, like you said, it's a vibe, really. Like, when it's a vibe, you're free. There's no limits. It's borderless.
You, and, you know, no judgment, no, you know, no prejudice. It's just free space, free ideas. Everyone's vibing.
Definitely.
And that's when, like, the best content, the best, you know, ideas come up when you're free and, you know, you're in your right headspace.
Yeah, and I just remember that the reason I actually spoke about this is because when I was doing some research for the full launch, when I was doing my talk on evangelism, I talked to a guy, but he was really helpful. Like, he works at Ingressive. It's like it's a market entry firm for global businesses and investment groups.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when they're looking for talent and founders and whatever, they go through campuses as well. People, if I understand what they do correctly, it's really venture capitalism on a different, taken from a different angle. So you're looking for the talent, you're looking for the co-founders, you're looking for the startups, and you're basically matching them with like potential investors and stuff like that. And it's really important to create that synergy, because that's not possible without the entire ecosystem working together at some level anyway.
Sure.
And we need all these bridges that kind of fit together to help everybody find their space, I guess. You should look it up.
Ingressive, yeah?
Yeah, Ingressive.
Let me just Google that. And yeah, I think it's really important, like you said, when you look at what these communities are doing and the whole, you know, the whole ecosystem, and it will fuel growth, really. And if you look at so many people complaining about stagnation with economic growth, and everyone's complaining about government and whatnot, you know, just, you know, yeah, I don't even want to talk about that. So yeah, like, you know, that's like the power of, you know, of these communities and tech as a whole, you know, the effect it can have on people's lives, on countries, on, you know, on so much. And I said I wouldn't talk about this, but like it goes back to, you know, building not just communities, but building inclusive and, you know, welcoming communities where people are free to share all these ideas. And, you know, like the Campus Expert program for me, like the GitHub Campus Expert program, really just, it helped me look at communities from a different perspective.
Yeah.
Because at first, when I got into community, I was a member, not just a member, because I don't want to diminish the value of being a member of a community, because really, community is just a member. But when you see like the bigger picture of the effect people can have, of the effect communities can have on people's lives, you start to really have motivation, really, to just grow more and try and reach out to more people. I gave this talk at the Campus Expert Summit, looking at the bigger picture,
mm-hmm.
and seeing, you know, how all this community work affects different people around, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, a domino effect. So like, it's just one small action you do that affects another person, and you know, it goes down, and there's so many things that work out just because of something small that you've done, or just this small meetup you had.
Yeah, and if we really talk about, because we've spoken about a lot of things, and when we zero in on the actual problems with growing communities, like on the local industry. Now I have this thing in my head, and I'm trying to figure out how, because this relationship, like, I'm so lucky to have someone like Cynthia, you know, around, even on the podcast, because there's so much she says. I don't know if she realizes it, but there's so much she says that.
I really loved her talk on imposter syndrome.
Yeah, definitely. And even at Inspirathon, you know, when she talked about it being a two-way street, two-way street, and you know what? I feel like we give so much as communities right now. We're giving a lot. We're giving so many opportunities.
True.
But are people willing to take the opportunities?
Yeah.
You know, I think if it's Hashcode, you have an opportunity to go to, I think last year was Paris, you know, to take part in like the final round of the competition. And this could literally put you on the map. And when you really think about it, even though Hashcode is kind of directed towards like engineers mostly, it's still the same problems we go through on a daily basis. If you're an engineer, you know, algorithms and data structure problems.
Exactly.
Like, I remember 2017 Hashcode is when I really, really got into how YouTube actually works and distributes like content across the world. I actually learned how stuff is trending in one part of the world, but people on that side have no idea what's going on, you know?
True.
Like, it's really interesting. And when you zero down on it, you realize the problem is actually, or the challenges are actually quite simple if you know what you're doing. And to truth be told, a lot of people know what they're doing. They just don't attend meetups. They don't make the effort to.
I think it's they don't realize the value of everything of these, you know, of these meetups, which it could be that people are not putting it out there properly. Like, you know, the community is not saying, okay, doing this would affect you
in this way,
and would give you all these opportunities, or it's just people don't have like their priorities set to that. They want something else from for their lives, and you really can't force people to attend your meetups if they don't want to.
If they don't want to. And it's up to you to show them the value,
yeah,
I guess.
And those are the problems that, you know, you can't, what's that saying? You can take a horse to the river, but you can't make it drink
water. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have no idea how to get past that. It's really something we need to think about.
Hmm.
I don't know. I feel like it's still a mindset change that's needed. Yeah. I have no idea. It's tough, really. Because, you know, you have all these opportunities. One thing that really hit me also, so like at DevCon, Regina talked about all these opportunities, all these scholarships that
they
have.
Yeah.
And then all of them are just, they just, you know, no one takes them up. No one applies. And some of them are going now because, like, you know, it's something that would help you out, but it's like people don't even want to be helped.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, it also goes back to how we have a lot of people with ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
That are waiting for funding or all these things just to get going. I think I had a revolution, should have been 2017. I get so busy, like 9 to 5 and outside,
yeah,
like extra activities are really difficult to like balance and everything.
Very true.
So you may not have as many opportunities. I feel so bummed. Like there's a lot of times there's the particular meetups that I want to attend, but they're during the week and it's during working hours. And I'm like, crap, I can't attend this.
I wish.
And then there's people out there that have all the time in the world. You could even live next door to the venue that's having the event. I guess it goes back to what you're talking about. You know, you can take a horse to the river, but you can't force it to drink. It's interesting. It's when we're dealing with people, there's a different dynamic. And the mindset, obviously, is the biggest problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what you said earlier about feedback being important. I guess maybe there's an extra step we could take as communities to kind of figure out what the needs exactly are right now in this instant. One of the issues that I found most about organizing meetups is sometimes you get people that have no idea what programming is or coding or even using a computer in general is.
Yeah.
So you find yourself teaching the basics of the computer first before you can even teach the programming. And it goes back to having a lot of patience,
mm-hmm,
like being patient with people. And I like what Regina said. Some people don't really learn if you have slides in front of them. You have to kind of figure out a different way to communicate effectively and so on and so forth, which is really,
yeah, so like
really important.
I like what you said about, you know, like, you know, not, like some people, you don't even have to use slides, just speak to them. I think it's important to first look at the problem, secondly look at who the problem affects, and then, you know, get it from their mouths and say, oh, okay, this is exactly what the problem is and this is how it's affecting me. And then you create a solution based off what you've been told, not based off what you assume.
What
and
you
I think
assuming.
I touched on this earlier. Like from the Inspirethon, we had people say stuff like, I don't even have a computer, so how do I even start with programming, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why would you, like, you know, give someone internet, like, if they don't even have a computer?
Yeah.
I think, like, the solution is internet, but they don't even have a computer, so,
yeah,
you know? So I think it's very specific problems for very specific people that we have, and if we start to build communities and first target the community's problems before we, you know, we start to give them content or, you know, give them solutions, if the communities that come up, like target people, specific people, not people in general,
mm-hmm,
and start solving small problems, the bigger problem as a whole will start to disappear. So I feel it's really important that we do that for future communities that come up and for communities that currently are, you know, running. Find a demographic, target,
mm-hmm,
that demographic, solve their problems, and
basically,
you know,
work from,
yeah,
there.
Don't be too general, in short.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to do a small thing, but in a great way.
Mm.
Because I feel like there are people who want to, like, make change, but people want to, like, have the biggest impact. Sometimes the biggest impacts come from the smallest actions. And then people need to know that.
I feel like I should end the podcast on that note. that's...
It would be the perfect.
I guess we've covered a lot of stuff, and I hope we've spoken to a few people out there,
I hope so.
That will kind of get that motivation to get started in their own communities. So I say this every time before we have a Global Game Jam event in Lusaka. And I think we took over, when I first attended my Global Game Jam, my first Global Game Jam event was in 2015, I think. I was at UNSA, right across the road. And by then, Bongo Hive was across the road as well, just from the main entrance. Mm-hmm. And the group that used to run GGJ in Osaka was, what are they called again? Ubongo Game Labs.
Yeah.
That's Site and them. And I had fun. Like, I had so much fun. And I remember Site talking to me and Elias about it. And she was asking if we were willing to take over hosting the event on a yearly basis. And the same concern then is the same concern now. It's not a monopoly. It's not like we're the only people that can have a game jam event in Osaka.
Yes.
It's pretty much open. Anybody can register a site.
Mm.
And this is what we encourage everybody before we start, like, even when we start marketing the event and asking people to register, we really push people to open sites in their areas, wherever they are. Like, we want a site on the Gold Belt. We want to be able to jam with people in the same country in different parts as well. Maybe January, there's a really good possibility that we'll have two sites this year,
yes.
Livingston and Lusaka, okay. which will be really, really, really fun. So it goes back to, our cry as a whole, like how many people are willing to get into it and be self-motivated and kind of push themselves to, you know?
To do that. And I like that you mentioned that you want to have, like, you know, more sites. I feel like it's a huge problem we have here that everything is centered on
Lusaka.
On
like,
Lusaka.
Everything is happening in Lusaka.
Yeah, which is really terrible because we've got so much talent in, you know, not just talent, but even just potential talent in so many other places. So look at, you know, if at least every provincial capital had, you know, some ecosystem or some communities and they're, you know, interacting and, you know, training and developing developers, I feel like everything would change and so much would change.
Yeah.
And that's a problem we should look at also, reaching out to more places and trying and get them engaging, because having meetups only in Lusaka, I think there's a few that are starting up in the Copper Belt, which is really amazing.
Yeah, I think I spoke to a couple of guys early this year. I haven't heard from them since then, though. I'll do a check on them just to see how they're doing. Maybe next year will be a really good year. I feel next year will be amazing.
Because I think even at the conference, I love that, first of all, like, all the communities, like, were there and present.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it would have been much, much better if we had more people from around the country coming here and, you know, and I feel they didn't come because they don't exist. We don't have, like, those tech spaces in other parts of the country.
Yeah.
I think we need to...
We need to work on that.
Yeah, we need to like, disperse the community talent and get people in other places. And going back to, like, you know, talking about Nigeria and Kenya. So, I don't know if you noticed it, but, like, they had the DevFest, GDG DevFest.
Yeah, I think
so
I noticed Kenya's. I didn't notice Nigeria's, though.
They had the one in Nigeria,
mm-hmm.
The one in Lagos, had like 2,000 people,
mm-hmm.
2,000, Lagos. And the capital of Nigeria is, starts with A?
Abuja.
Yeah, Abuja.
Wait,
the capital
Lagos isn't the capital of Nigeria?
No, Lagos is not the capital of Nigeria. And yeah, so yeah, get this.
Shocked face.
So GDG Lagos had 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this weekend, the 27th, the 17th,
mm-hmm.
they had GDG Uyo. 1,000 people. That's just another city in Lagos, in Nigeria. And you see, they have so many, they don't have everything in a central location, you know, they have people in different spaces so that they don't feel left out and they know that there's something going on there also.
Yeah.
So we really need to, you know, target different places and, you know, get people from all over. Who knows, we might have more people interested in like Solwezi or, you know, Chipata or Livingston, for example, in development.
Definitely.
So we really need to touch on, like, other areas and, you know, see what's happening that side and see what we can get started.
Okay. And I guess on that note, we end today's podcast. It's been amazing.
Yeah, it's been great. Mukuma is amazing to chat with.
Yeah.
I mean, the time I've been in Zambia, we've had so many, you know,
so many different conversations. Yeah. And the conversations will continue online.
Definitely.
We'll probably stay in contact as much as possible. There's a lot to be done next year.
Really?
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. I think we had conversations about restructuring some of the models that we have around communities, mm-hmm. see if we can capture as many people as possible without segmenting the community space.
Exactly.
It's really important not to do that. And
I feel like those, like the restructuring, which we need to make them replicable so that we can, like I said, expand to like different areas. And also, you know, on the segmenting, it's okay to, you know, find a target.
A niche.
Yeah, a niche.
Find your niche.
And find people who you want to target and get attendees. So that, you know, you're not all fighting for the same people.
Mm.
And it's really important. And I love the fact that all the communities really are sitting down and
working
and,
together.
Yeah,
I love that too.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that even the developer conference, and this is why even in the final remarks, right, you have everybody at the front.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate because there were some more people in the crowd who should have been standing in the front,
yes.
too, and didn't even know they should have been standing in front. Because there was a lot of input from different communities from the beginning, even from the survey up until the final day, like so many communities that actually put in something, which was very humbling. And even up to now, I feel like I still can't believe that we actually put it off, which is really great.
It's history. Like I think I told you about that. Like, just look at everyone in the room, and it's history being made at UNSA.
Mm, yeah.
And it was amazing. So I guess next year we'll look back and say that's where we started.
So this has been episode 5 of podcast. And really hope you enjoyed it. I had so much fun. Hoping when we kick off in January, we'll have so much more content for you guys. And you will enjoy it as much as we do in the studio every time we sit here and we talk to people. It's unscripted. That's pretty much the best part.
You can tell from all my mistakes.
It's really unscripted. We're all about honest opinions and telling it as it is, which for me is a great motivation to do what I do. So if you're trying to catch us, we're on Twitter, we're Codecast. We're not yet on Facebook, but I guess we will eventually, as time goes on. If you want to catch me, I'm on pretty much almost every platform, including Instagram soon, again. So on Twitter, that's Sourbones. If you want to catch me on GitHub and see what I'm doing, that's K9UMA, so that's K9UMA. Facebook as well, that's Kenan Uma. And what other platforms have I? Too many, yeah? But hey, you catch one, you catch all of them, because I talk about them all the time.
True. Let me plug my Instagram.
Of course, please.
So like mine, I'm not as complicated as Mukuma. So if you want to find me on anything, it's Malgamves, Malgamves. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Medium.
I've been meaning to ask, what is Malgamves? Like, I've been trying to figure it out, like... I feel like I know what your middle name is, so I'm like, okay.
Okay, so Malgamves. I already spelled it, I guess. Let me just do it again. Malgamves. So it's something I came up with when I just got onto the internet. I think I was creating a Facebook account or a Gmail account. I wanted something really unique because like I typed Daniel Piri and I want, you know, it was like, this is not available. So I wanted something unique. And so like, yeah, my middle name is Madalitso. And I won't say my other name. So yeah, it's like a combination of all my names. And like, I used to really like football. And there's this player, Dani Alves, right?
Yeah.
So like, people used to call me Dani Alves. I used to play. I still do play, like, but like low-key. So it's a combination of like a lot of names. So like Madalitso, another name with G. And then Vez, like from Alves, from Daniel Alves. So that's...
I'll ask you off here. I need to know what it is.
I don't know. Let's see who can guess what the name is.
I guess so. I still have a lot of giveaways from the conference and from previous meetups. So if you are interested, just hit me up on Twitter. That's Sourbones. That's Sour_bones. I've got cheat sheets. I've got stickers. I've got a lot of other stuff I won't say right now. And just follow me and stand a chance to grab your own.
Yeah, I guess we could ship them around the country. We've got Musanga now.
Yeah, definitely. All right, guys, it's been real. Codecast, we're out.
You've been listening to Codecast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. Visit agoracode.community for more information or like us on Facebook. That's @CodeAgora. We're on Twitter too, @CodeAgora.